From 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, welcome to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you and from Eskenazi Health. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buscelli Wallerab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
I'm Sharon Gamble. Welcome to The Art of the Matter. On today's show, we'll spend some time with a Hoosier singer-songwriter, go behind the scenes on Dan Wakefield's newest project, and find out which animals will come out to greet you in the winter at the Indianapolis Zoo. And don't forget, we'll have that arts calendar we call
What'll We Do?
All that and more right after the latest news from NPR. Welcome back to The Art of the Matter from 90.1 WFYI Public Radio. I'm Sharon Gamble. This week, we'll take a tiny train ride past some of our nation's most distinctive landmarks and hear about an innovative partnership that links food, the arts, and an urban building that needed to be saved. But first, Dan Wakefield is all kinds of guys. He's the guy you'd like to have a glass of wine with at the Red Key Tavern so you could hear his stories about growing up in Indy in the middle of the last century. He's the guy who can coach you on how to use language to connect to your spirituality. He's the guy with amazing stories of living in Manhattan in the 1950s. All of those guys come together in Dan's new radio project, Uncle Dan's Story Hour. It was too early for wine when he dropped by to talk with me, but we clinked coffee cups. Pour yourself something and listen in. So, Uncle Dan, take me back to the genesis of this project.
Well, the genesis of the project was the Red Key Tavern, where so many good things happened. And Michael Thurwechter, who does their website and was taking photos for the website, and he came up to me one night and said, listen, I talked to Jim Settle, the owner, and I said, Jim, Monday nights are always slow. Why don't we have Dan come in one Monday night a month, and we'll call it Writer's Night? And my immediate reaction was, no, because then people will want me to read their writing. Let's call it Uncle Dan's Story Hour. So that was the origin. That's how it all began. And then my friend Will Higgins, who created the first and second Going All the Way bus tour. First one was in 1989 when I was living somewhere else. I was living in Boston, then, in fact, and came back. But anyway, he had done this and sort of the one that was a year ago, he and I together talked while we went to the sites where that were written about in the novel Going All the Way.
Sure.
And so I knew we could do this patter back and forth. So I asked him to be my co-host, and he said, Dan, I will be Ed McMahon to your Johnny, or I will be... who's the guy to your Merv Griffin? Who was Merv Griffin's guy?
Oh, you've got me there. I'm
he
so
was
sorry.
Even, that was even funnier. Arthur Treacher.
Arthur Treacher,
yeah,
sure.
Who later started a chain of fish and chip stores. So I said, well, if things go wrong, you can always have your chain of fish and chip stores. So anyway, but that was the beginning, and it's really grown, and we've got some great people involved. Michael, of course, and Pat Chastain. And I asked my good friend Susan Neville, who is really my favorite Indiana author and one of my favorite authors anywhere in the world. And she always does a little reading at the end of the show. And we have my favorite musician, the saxophone player Sophie Fought, who played for years at the Chatterbox, and she plays a song at our intermission. And then in closing, she always plays I'll Be Seeing You.
Aww.
And that is, I just love that, and it really adds a lot to the show.
So my guess is, even though it's not called the Writer's Hour, people still accost you and ask you to read their work.
Not really, not much lately. And, you know, it's not that I don't want to read other people's work. It's that there's always an expectation that I can help them get published. And it's not like the old days. And, you know, the great editors I knew and the great agents are now at the great publishing house in the sky. So I have even more limited resources. And
there are a lot of writers who are saying, agent, that's
yeah.
I vaguely remember that concept, but it's hard to find agents.
Yeah, you know what? I go every year to a great health spa called Rancho La Puerta in Mexico. And one year, they had a very well-known Buddhist guru of some kind.
Mm-hmm.
And he was there giving these very spiritual talks. And there was another writer there I give a little talk there and give a writer's workshop to pay my way, sing for my supper. And so one night, the other writer and I were really excited. We were told that the guru wanted to see us personally in his guru abode.
Wow.
And so we thought, oh, my God, he must have seen the spiritual nature that both of us radiate. So we went there, and what he wanted to know was, could we get him an agent? I thought
no.
I would pass out. The holy man wants an agent.
There's a whole other career path for you.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Speaking of spirituality, I remember when it was not long after you moved back, if memory serves, mm-hmm. that you began doing these wonderful workshops about finding spirituality and expressing spirituality, writing about spirituality. So it has to have been a dream of yours to have Ann Ryder involved in one of the story hours.
Oh, yeah. She is fabulous. And we did this holiday show that I'm so proud of. I'm really so happy with it. We not only had, and that show is going to be on, as you know, it'll be aired on WFYI December 23rd at 1 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
And we have Ann Ryder, who tells about her amazing experience interviewing Mother Teresa and how she was allowed to interview her, what she had to do, and what she had, the way she had to present herself. They weren't just going to let her interview. They had to know she was sincere, genuine. She had to do the kind of work that Mother Teresa did, show that she really was not just there as a publicist or TV person.
Just there for some sort of
right.
worldly
yeah.
profit.
Yeah, she really, and she described beautifully and movingly how she washed the backs of these very undernourished women, and they were one in such pain that even when she dripped water from a sponge on over her, the woman screamed.
Wow.
And so she realized she had to just stop, and she started massaging her very gently and did that work and really understood what that meant.
Mm-hmm.
And then she was interviewed by Mother Teresa's gatekeeper, Mother Teresa's bad cop, who keeps out the frivolous TV people,
sure.
and was allowed to see her, and it was a great experience. But what I'm also very proud of, we had a wonderful Muslim woman, Wasima Ali, who is the director of the Desmond Tutu Center here, which is allied to the Christian Theological Seminary. And She was marvelous. She was really articulate, and she's a Muslim from Skokie, Illinois, and really enlightened us about Islam, and that this Christmas is not one of their big holidays. However, Jesus is thought of as their Messiah. And Mary is a saint in the Muslim religion. But just having her there and having her be part of this discussion was really a great pleasure. And we had Hyleen Flansbaum from Butler, who you know, I didn't realize this. I knew she was an expert in Jewish literature, but she's actually edited the Norton Anthology of Jewish Literature, which is sort of the standard thing that all colleges and universities use. She was very enlightening. I talked about my early Baptist Bible class here in Indianapolis when I was in grade school, and my falling away from religion, becoming a collegiate atheist, and then going back to it in Boston in a wonderful church on Christmas Eve and starting a whole other part of my life. And after I wrote the book called Returning, A Spiritual Journey, I then started doing these workshops called Spiritual Autobiography, and those have taken me all over the country and to Northern Ireland and to Sing Sing Prison. And I've given them at schools, monasteries, churches, synagogues. I gave a short version of it here at Sandy Sasso's synagogue. And it's just been a great experience to do that work.
Author Dan Wakefield. You can hear the third installment of Uncle Dan's Story Hour on Friday, December 23rd at 1 p.m. on the air, and you can hear all three installments online at WFYI.org. Singer-songwriter Jenny DeVoe has a new album called Picking Flowers on the Moon, and one of the songs is called My Last Hometown. She's very proud to be from Indiana and to call Muncie her hometown, as WFYI's Melissa Davis and Jill Dittmeyer learned recently when they hosted Jenny in a small studio session.
It was such a small town. I think it helped my imagination. I mean, I feel like for all the places I've been, I am really from the Midwest. You know, we are so Midwesternly grown here, and I'm really proud of that because you really have to use your imagination. I've, you know, thought as a songwriter about moving to Nashville or LA or New York, and I've been to all those places, and I don't know, something about being here keeps you real, at least keeps me real.
Less and less and less. It's gonna last and last. This ain't my first hometown, won't be my last. And every time you look at me, you're looking at my past.
DeVoe is the middle child and credits her parents for raising her well.
They're wonderful people. I mean, they gave my sister and my brother and I really good, solid things to hang on to no matter where we went in life. But I was trouble. I was really trouble. But, you know, I think growing up in a small town and being, I guess, you know, when I was young, we didn't have diagnoses of ADD, but that's what I ended up really finding out later, that was probably my lack of being able to sit still very long. So, and they say you carry that with you. Of course, we've all heard about all that adult ADD, but I feel it played into me being able to multitask like crazy person. So run my record label, do something I love, do booking, help with website, just, you know, write songs. It's kind of a perfect thing for me.
Say I'm easy, call me what you want, tell me I'm crazy, baby, call me underdone, oh, call me a dreamer, coming over with.
DeVoe channeled that energy early on by writing and singing mainly rock and roll.
I had a lot of, you know, past stuff to write about. And it wasn't necessarily autobiographical, just great song sparkers. Now I just really want to write good, solid songs that might stick around.
But if you can't make a change now, baby, we ain't gonna make it through.
DeVoe has produced three albums in England. The latest, Radiator, the Bristol Sessions, recorded at the famous studio called The Toy Box.
It looks like you're going into an underground bomb shelter, and it's just this real thick cement, and they've got all kinds of things in there. So we don't really take anything except maybe one or two instruments with us, and we use everything there. So it's kind of, there's always the element of surprise as to what's going to go on, but we like to put everything on analog tape, old two-inch tape, because it seems to capture some extra stuff besides just digital sound, which sometimes zaps the air out of everything. So the sound is like a warm tape sound, and I like going about it the old-fashioned way. It's old-fashioned like before I was doing stuff, but it just seems like people are going back to that anyway. Two-inch tape, vinyl, everything. So I love it.
DeVoe says the future of her music includes the sounds of the past.
We have a lot of good stuff that came out of here. John Hiatt, Hoagy Carmichael, Cole Porter, just that kind of stuff. Is now, it's like I'm just like, oh, it's just like mining for gold, looking for influences.
They say there's a story no one will tell. Is it true about a heaven and hell? They say there's a man who will finally understand. When you find him, you'll know he's a one. There are whispers, it's true, and clouds in your face.
Learn more about Indianapolis musician Jenny DeVoe at wfyi.org/smallstudio. You're listening to The Art of the Matter on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, and I'm Sharon Gamble. Later this hour, a commercial kitchen art gallery hybrid and visiting with flamingos in the winter. But first, Jolene Ketzenberger recently talked with Corey Quinn of Goose the Market about their Smoking Bishop kit, which is a reference from Dickens' A Christmas Carol, and a smoking bishop is a drink. The Goose crew found an old recipe and they put together a kit with all of the ingredients, and Jolene got the scoop.
So tell me a little bit about what is available in a shop like Goose. I mean, it's a meat market, but it's a lot more than that. And so what are some of the other things that people might be surprised at when they come in?
It's very true. Our 18 feet of meat is definitely the heart and soul of Goose the Market. We are a butcher shop at heart, but we're really a one-stop shop, not just during the holidays, but all year round. It's especially fun during the holidays because you can find so many local and artisan-made products in the place. A lot of folks are surprised, you know, when you come into the shop, that beautiful gelato case catches everyone's attention. Of course, all those farmstead cheeses, a gorgeous display in the meat case, and it's easy to just drift right on through the first floor without ever knowing there's a cellar downstairs. It's like a whole nother world when you get to go downstairs at the shop. Beautiful, really, really nice, and very, very quickly rotating selection of beers and wines. We have no back room, so literally every 2 to 3 days, the selection of beer and wines is changing here at the shop. We take our cues from those cases upstairs, so we're looking for unique beers and wines, things that you won't find on lists and on shelves all over town, but that really reflect the season, so they're picking out flavors that are going to match with what folks are serving on the holiday table.
But now upstairs, when people first walk in, I mean, you do have a lot of product, you know, in and around the checkout area, on the shelves, you know, by the meat counter. Tell me some of the local things that we might find there too.
All types of items that bake really great gifts up there as well, especially the dry goods. Those are great to wrap up. You don't have to worry about refrigeration, storage, all that good stuff under the tree. So all different types of local mustards and preserves, jams, maple syrup in there too. We just got in this really delicious and super creamy cheese that's made just over the border in Kentucky. It's made by a native Italian who has immigrated to Kentucky, and it's in a beautiful glass jar too, so it makes a great gift. It's right up front by the register, easy to spot when you first walk in the shop.
Well, you have to tell me about your smoking bishop, the drink, the kit, how it all came about.
Oh, absolutely. This is my favorite part of drinking at the holidays. So Smoking Bishop is a 19th century spiced wine punch. It's spiked with tangerines and port, has all really those rich winter spices in it. It's actually mentioned by Charles Dickens at the end of A Christmas Carol. So after Scrooge has gone through his transformation, you know, he says to Cratchit, I'm going to help your children walk. I'm going to get you a better job. We're going to give you a raise. Let's talk about all of these details over a bowl of Smoking Bishop. So we're reading this story thinking, what is he talking about? Did a little bit of research and found an American recipe for the drink in the first cocktail recipe book ever published in the U.S. from the early 19th century. So we took this recipe here at Goose and translated it into a modern day kitchen. We're making it by the glass, ready to drink downstairs in the cellar. But we also have Smoking Bishop kits. So all of the ingredients, the wine, the port, the spices, the citrus, the everything that you need, including step-by-step instructions, all ready to go in a gift bag. So it's great to come in and get if you're going to have a party. It makes a brilliant hostess gift as well, especially with that holiday connection, you know, the background of Dickens and Scrooge too.
Oh, that's fun. So now tell me a little bit about how it tastes.
Oh, it tastes like Christmas in a glass. It really does. It's hard to describe it without taking on a bit of a British accent, I think, there too. It's rich and warm, really spicy with the winter spice. So clove, cinnamon, ginger, star anise. And then it has a little bit of citrus from toasted, roasted tangerines. And then again, that backbone of port really kind of driving the entire flavor. Because it's served warm, it goes down dangerously easy. Should definitely try it many times before the guests arrive just to ensure quality.
Jolene Ketzenberger with Corey Quinn of Goose the Market. You can hear her Eat, Drink, Indy Saturday mornings at 11 on WFYI HD2, The Point. It's not unusual to load some family or friends into the car to head to the zoo in the summer months, but the Indianapolis Zoo's Carla Knapp suggests why you might want to enjoy a quieter visit during the next few weeks. So my first curiosity is, what kind of animals can we see if we come to Christmas at the zoo? I'm guessing a lot of them are in bed by the time I'm coming out to see the lights at Christmas at the zoo.
Well, some of them will be in bed, but actually a lot of them are outdoors. We have tigers, brown bears, seals and sea lions, walrus, and actually a whole lot more that enjoy this colder weather. Some of them, like our red pandas, are nocturnal. So not only do they enjoy the colder weather, they also are more active at night. So you're going to see a lot of animals that are out. They're going to be active. And even a few species that you may not even think of, for instance, are flamingos. Yes, right?
Who knew?
Lots of people expect that they're summer creatures, and they are. They absolutely love tropical climates, but they're actually really well acclimated to colder temperatures as well. So the lights are going to be coming on at night, and you can wander down into our Flights of Fancy exhibit and enjoy our flamingos as well.
Just don't try to put the little elf hats with the bell on them.
Right. That wouldn't go so well.
No. The animals aren't bothered by the lights?
No, not at all. It's just kind of the same routine for them.
Sure.
They don't really notice anything different.
They don't know it's Christmas
yes,
time.
Yes. They, at least that we are aware of, yeah. They don't seem to mind the lights at all. And actually, because there's, you know, Christmas at the zoo attracts a lot more guests, a lot of our animals actually really enjoy interacting with guests. So the more people are around, no matter what it is that attracts them, whether it's the lights at this time of year or during the summer season, they enjoy being around people and having people to interact with.
Sure.
So they don't mind the lights at all.
Aw, that's very sweet. I love that. So let's talk about the lights, because this is one amazing light display.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we have lights absolutely covering the zoo. So they come on every night around dusk. And I always encourage people to come out early. It gives them a chance to come and visit some of our animals, maybe some of them that are going to be only out during the day.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's just really fun to experience the lights as they come on. They just kind of pop on and transform the zoo around dusk into just this sparkling, warm, magical atmosphere. It's so beautiful as it's coming on.
Now, do you have a designer on staff who figures out the light display each year, or
yeah.
is that a freelance person, or how does that work?
Well, we actually, our talented staff does all of that. We do work to update some of the displays that we have, and we do work with a provider that will design some of the animal displays that mm-hmm. we have, some of the larger lighted displays that we do that are animated. But then our wonderful staff does all of the work with preparing the zoo grounds. It takes about 3 months actually for all of the lights to go up around the zoo. So it's a really big undertaking.
Which is probably good because they get to start when the weather's a little bit, bit warmer, right?
They sure do. They start around September to put the lights up. And then right after the Christmas at the zoo is over, they begin to start taking those lights down. So they're working outdoors in the cold as well. Mm. So I just, our crew does such a spectacular job.
What are your favorite parts of Christmas at the zoo?
Oh my gosh. I really enjoy strolling around, and I always enjoy seeing animals doing things that they wouldn't be doing at different times of the year. Mm-hmm. Again, some of these animals are tigers, are brown bears. This is their time of year, and they're going to be doing different things and be active in different ways that you're just not going to experience during the summer months. And then it's always very magical to walk around. You have the music playing in the background, and you know, there's a little bit of a chill in the air. I love it whenever there's a little snowfall going on, and you just kind of get to wander and kind of explore. It's a very romantic and intimate setting for me whenever the lights are on and it's dark out.
And, well, and in the evening it's a little quieter too than visiting on a height of summer day in July,
yeah,
right?
Absolutely. It just has a whole different feel whenever you're at the zoo at night.
In 1967, the Indianapolis Zoo was the very first zoo in the United States to hold a holiday lights event. And this year you can see those lights and ask the flamingos how they feel about Indiana winters through December 30th. For times and details, visit indianapoliszoo.com. What if you could take a train trip that took you past Mount Rushmore, the Grand Canyon, Old Faithful, the Golden Gate Bridge, and Lucas Oil Stadium? And what if that trip featured kid-sized G-scale model trains? That's the setup for the Idlejorg Museum's annual Jingle Rails exhibit, and Jill Sheridan took a family excursion to investigate.
It's made of real wood.
Yeah, it is. Isn't that cool?
Yeah.
When we enter the lofty Idlejorg Museum in downtown Indianapolis, the first thing we see is the newest addition to Jingle Rails. It's a classic train engine reproduction made all of wood. Children can stick their heads out the front, and there's buttons to push. Max and Veronica immediately hop in. Brian Corbin, public relations manager at the museum, says it's been a popular addition.
Almost life-size train engine made of all natural materials, wood, bark, tree roots, honeycomb, acorns, shell fungus. So it's really neat to see. It's a photo op. Kids really enjoy it, and it kind of gets people in the mindset to see the Jingle Rails display.
Train. Where are they? Yeah. Applied.
This piece was done by a company called Applied Imagination, and the landscapes for the Jingle Rails exhibits have also been crafted by the group that works with natural elements.
They do what's called botanical architecture, Applied Imagination. They have done similar type of train displays at the United States Botanical Gardens in Washington, D.C., at the New York Botanical Gardens, and elsewhere. And this is sort of their stock and trade of making natural-looking miniature landscapes out of all natural materials. That's what they do.
Oh, a house up there.
Jingle Rails takes you on a journey that travels back to the days of the Old West, says Corbin.
And you'll see the trains traveling from downtown Indianapolis, miniatures of downtown Indianapolis, to some of the national parks and some of the famous landmarks of the West, such as Yellowstone, Glacier National Park, Mount Rushmore, Las Vegas, the Golden Gate Bridge, Mesa Verde, Aspen Ski Resort, and several other places out west, and then returning to downtown Indianapolis. So it's kind of a whimsical trip of the imagination.
St. Clair, I think.
Every year they've tried to add some new elements to continue to grow the exhibit that's become a holiday tradition in downtown Indianapolis. There are 9 locomotives that tour the stations of Jingle Rails. Volunteers like Tom Bramstrup are in charge of making sure they stay on schedule.
There's a big, fancy silver passenger coach that is the mock-up of the Santa Fe Super Chief, which ran until the late 50s, early 60s, which was the train of the stars because it ran from Chicago to L.A. There's an Indiana Railroad freight train, which is an operating train in Indiana today.
Can you tell what everything's made out of?
Max seems much more taken with the experience than his older sister, Veronica. There's one rule that seems especially hard for the little ones.
Is it hard not to touch, Max?
Yeah.
Why do you want to touch it?
Because it looks awesome.
That's what keeps me running around in circles in here.
Wait, here it comes.
The model train hobby is something that crosses generations, and Brandstrup says this exhibit captures people's imaginations during the holidays like a certain way that may be lost.
People my age, older generation, remember the treat of coming downtown Indianapolis at Christmas to LS Airs and Blocks and seeing all the display in their windows. That doesn't exist anymore, but this does, and I think this tradition of this is going to replace that tradition of being in those windows.
And even if much of it is lost on a five-year-old girl,
no, I don't even like it.
You can't help but admire the craftsmanship. The miniature Las Vegas certainly makes me want to take a trip there. The Jingle Rails exhibit runs through January 16th at the Idlejorg Museum.
Jill Sheridan and her family at the Idlejorg Museum's Jingle Rails, the Great Western Adventure. You too can vicariously ride the trains through January 16th. Jill Dittmeyer, you've visited this exhibit before.
And I'm not as harsh of a critic as Veronica. I find it delightful.
I do, too. I love all the little leaves and twigs and all the creativity that goes into recreating these amazing monuments in miniature scale.
They never go out of style. They're always fascinating.
It's so true. We have some other fascinating things going on around and about on our calendar that we call What'll We Do? What do you have?
Well, I want to reiterate once again, if you can't make it to the first Friday in downtown Indianapolis, put on your calendar to hit the second Saturday in Carmel. It's a great event, and you can go up there and see a lot of artists. A lot of the Indianapolis area artists are in the galleries that are up there, too. And all throughout the month of December, all those galleries will be open showing art in and out. And so if you see their art in the Indianapolis galleries and you go up there, you can kind of compare and contrast what they do and their different means of doing so. So it's a nice kind of fun thing to do because everything's inside when
it's cold. And you have to walk by a lot of nice places to eat and drink to get from one gallery to the next.
Yes, you do.
I love it.
That holiday spirit.
You know, they could rename that or rebrand it Painting for Procrastinators.
Ooh.
For the people who didn't make it to First Friday, they can go to Second Saturday.
I like that.
Smart thinking. I love it. So Chef's Night Off is coming up again, and they're partnering with MOKB to present, I'm so excited about this, Return of the Mac, Indy's first festival dedicated to the golden goodness we all love,
mac and cheese.
It's Sunday, January 8th at the Circle City Industrial Complex, which is at 1125 East Brookside Avenue. It's just a stone's throw beyond the north end of the Mass Ave Arts District downtown. You'll get to sample cheesy creations from more than 20 of Indy's favorite restaurants while chefs put on their own spin on everybody's favorite comfort food. They'll be judging by local foodies. But the important thing is you're going to get to eat macaroni and cheese.
I bet this one sells out.
Oh,
I think you need to get your tickets.
Like yesterday. Indeed. Restaurants represented include Thunderbird, Kuma's Corner, Clusterstruck, Hollyhock Hill, Sangrita Saloon, The District Tap, Charblue, Cobblestone Delicia, Rooster's Kitchen, Grigsby Station, Red Fraser, and as they say, many, many more. So check that out. Releasing Return of the Mac, January 8th, Circle City Industrial Complex.
Learn some new recipes and do them at home in the months to come. Wednesday, December 21st, they're back. It's Straight No Chaser. They're downtown at the Old National. Yes, it's the I'll Have Another World Tour. See, Wednesday, December 21st at the Old National Center in downtown Indianapolis. Get
Fantastic.
Your tickets.
Love it. Hey, painter Rick Wilson spent almost 2 years going around the state doing plein air painting at all of our state parks and recreational areas, and he's put together a 70-painting exhibition and sale celebrating Indiana's bicentennial. It's been on view a couple of places and is now on view at the Brown County Art Gallery. Good excuse to take a little road trip and go see Brown County. It is on exhibit through January 31st, and these are stunning paintings, and I will warn you, one side effect is after you look at these paintings, you're going to want to go to some of the state parks and some of our wonderful natural areas that maybe you haven't visited before.
Let's hope so.
Yeah.
On not quite Christmas Eve, the night before Christmas Eve, Friday, December 23rd at 7:30, it's the free Christmas Carol sing-along at the Indie Fringe Theater downtown on the corner of Massachusetts Avenue and St. Clair Street. It's a fun for all ages. Bring the kids, bring the aunts and the uncles, all those relatives that are in town, and sing and have good cheer.
I like it very much.
Friday, December the 23rd.
Hey, now that we're kind of in that time when, okay, we can officially say, hey, it's winter now, it's okay that it's cold, Connor Prairie is helping us out by having a workshop called Primitive Fire Starting. I hope none of us happens to need these skills.
But this for urban dwellers.
I know. It's January 14th from 9 till noon. It is for ages 16 and older, so leave your toddler pyromaniacs at home. No matches allowed here. You'll learn several different primitive fire starting methods, such as fire by friction, fire piston, burning lens, and flint and steel. You'll get to practice these skills, and you'll get to make your own flint and steel kit and char cloth. There you go. It's all going on at Connor Prairie, January 14th.
And also coming up ahead in January, since we're looking ahead here at the Indie Fringe Theater once again, it's the Winter Magic Fest. This is a fun weekend for everybody. And once again, it takes place Thursday, January 19th through Sunday, January 22nd. This year, it's going to be hosted by the fabulous husband and wife medalist Christian and Catalina. And it's the sixth year for that. But they bring in magicians from all over the world. So even if you've been the last 5 years, you're going to see something new and try to figure it out. How did they do it? If you need to find something else to do, go to the Arts Council of Indianapolis's Indie Arts Guide. It's indiearts.org/guide. Or join us next week when, once again, we ask that question.
What'll we do?
You're listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Indianapolis and central Indiana. Your host is Sharon Gamble. If your arts organization has an event or activity of which you think we should be aware, please contact us at least 3 weeks in advance. You can write us at The Art of the Matter, care of WFYI, 1630 North Meridian Street, Indianapolis, Indiana, 46202, or you can email us at aotm@wfyi.org. You can also hear The Art of the Matter on WFYI.org.
You're listening to The Art of the Matter on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio. I'm Sharon Gamble. It's an art gallery. It's a culinary incubation center. It's a commercial kitchen. It's a gathering place. It is Gary, Indiana's dynamic new experiment called Art House, a Social Kitchen, and it's a collaboration led by a visionary mayor and an artistic director borrowed from Chicago, and the subject of investment by Bloomberg Philanthropies, the Night Cities Challenge, and Place Lab. I invited Mayor Karen Freeman Wilson to tell me about Art House Social Kitchen, which launched Thanksgiving week. So take me back to the genesis of this idea. Where did Art House Social Kitchen come from?
Well, you know, this project began in two places. The first was that for the last 5 years, we've been working with students from the University of Chicago regarding challenges that we have in our community. And so every semester, we have a cohort of about 15 students who come over and work on issues that are of concern. And so as an example, they have worked on the airport. They have worked on concerns that we have a lot of issues that are of great concern, vacant and abandoned buildings, issues relative to the lack of restaurants in our community. And so it was the issue relative to restaurants that provided an opportunity for students to look at how do we encourage more restaurants. And at that time, of course, everyone was thinking about the established restaurants like TGI Friday,
sure, the chains.
Applebee's,
yeah,
you know, the chain restaurants. But their project took a turn when they started to look at encouraging local residents to really pursue their desire to get into the food business, whether it was catering or having a food truck or an actual restaurant. At the same time, we knew that we needed to kind of have something to draw people downtown, to bring folks together. And so we had an opportunity to go over to Chicago to look at some of the projects that Theaster Gates had been involved in, you know, kind of dealing with abandoned buildings and bringing them to a greater use or into use period. And we knew we had this restaurant downtown that was doing well in half of the building, the Mama Pearl side, but was really just a generic looking building that really didn't attract visitors. And so between the ideas of having the idea of having Theaster Gates come over and take a look at what was going on in some of our vacant and abandoned buildings and underutilized buildings, we came up with the idea of, you know, kind of developing this old restaurant into a public art project, and also to make it useful, because we understood that we couldn't just do public art and not have some type of use that the community could be really benefit from. And the two ideas came together. And at the same time, Bloomberg Philanthropies was actually doing a solicitation for public art projects. And the Knight Foundation was looking for place-making ideas. And we brought the two ideas together and brought Place Lab and the University of Chicago students and the City of Gary's team all came together to work on this project.
And the sum is greater than the result is greater than the sum of the parts, is what I'm trying to say.
Oh, it absolutely is. I mean, you know, we all had ideas of what this might be, but what it has become and even what it is becoming is even greater, I know, than I had imagined. And as I talked to Theaster, as I talked to some of the Michelle and some of the other city team, our redevelopment director, Joe Van Dyke, they are just amazed at what this has become.
So for our listeners who might not be so familiar with Gary, can you tell us a little bit about what's around this building, what's it near, and what else might bring traffic to the neighborhood?
So this building is just two blocks east of our main drag, which is Broadway.
Mm-hmm.
But it is also right across the street from our Railcat Stadium. And so we have seen an increase in attendance over the last 3 years to our Railcat baseball games. We also use it for high school games. We use it for concerts. This is directly across from that space. So there's a great opportunity to bring people who might be going to the game or coming from a game or going to a concert in the stadium, who would stop at Art House first and sample some of the cuisine that is offered, that will be offered by those people who are sort of building their businesses while being a part of the culinary incubator in Art House. It's also near City Hall and near the state office building, the county office building. So you have built-in customers during the week there as well. And it's in the Emerson community, an area that is really growing and where residents are developing local food businesses in terms of urban farms, urban gardens. So we envision them providing some of the raw product to the Art House businesses. So it's all about bringing separate factions, separate groups together to create one great opportunity in the city of Gary.
This feels like it's going to be a catalyst for even more than you and your team have envisioned.
We absolutely already see it. I mean, you know, the day that we had the opening, the Saturday right before Thanksgiving, it was one of the coldest days of the year. And we were outside roasting marshmallows. People were patronizing food trucks. There was a band playing on one side of the house, you know, sort of a jazz band. On the other side, the Gary Symphony Chorale, Civic Symphony, rather, was rehearsing for their upcoming Christmas event. And it was festive, both inside and out. And you would not have known that it was 35 degrees outside.
Mayor Karen Freeman Wilson talking about Gary's new art house, The Social Kitchen. If you'd like to check it out in person, it's directly across from the U.S. Steel Yard Stadium in the heart of Gary. Their programs and events are listed at arthousegary.com. A Cultural Manifesto's Kyle Long gets us in the mood with five local holiday tunes.
I'm Kyle Long from Cultural Manifesto. And tonight, I have five holiday-themed songs performed by Indiana artists that I'd like to share with you. Up first, I want to play a track from the legendary Indianapolis blues duo of Leroy Carr and Scrapper Blackwell. This track is titled Christmas in Jail, Ain't That a Pain, and it was released in 1929 on the Vocalion Records label.
The blues come falling, they fall like drops of rain. Blues come falling, they fall like drums of rain. I've got to spend my Christmas locked up in jail again. Jail on Christmas Day again, ain't that a pain? Oh, baby, baby, baby.
And my second selection is from the Indianapolis jazz great Freddie Hubbard. Freddie Hubbard is one of my favorite musicians. He graduated from Arsenal Tech in the late 50s and went on to have an extraordinary career in jazz music. Hubbard is most known for his work in the hard bop or post bop style, but he played on some of the most experimental records ever made. But the selection I'm going to share with you tonight is much more conventional. In 1985, the great Ray Charles recorded a jazzy Christmas LP for Columbia titled The Spirit of Christmas. Freddie Hubbard is featured on a couple tracks on that record, and we're going to listen to the jazzy waltz track All I Want for Christmas, featuring Freddie Hubbard on flugelhorn.
Shopping, stuffed all my stockings, filled up my heart to the brim.
All right, I'm going to play a couple more unconventional Christmas tracks now. I recently featured the Bloomington-based orchestral pop group Busman's Holiday on my show. Busman's Holiday is essentially a duo composed of the Rogers brothers, Addison and Lewis. Before making a name for themselves with Busman's Holiday, Addison and Lewis were part of a pretty weird and short-lived rap group called Rusty Zavidson. They put out only one project, a Christmas-themed EP released in 2008. It's titled A Wonderful Christmas, and it's only available on their MySpace page.
Don't really realize how lonely you are until you're spending Christmas at the Applebee's bar. You see cars lined up on Christmas Eve, and nowadays that's become my Christmas tree. See, being on the road, it has its perks, but Christmas is where the loneliness lurks. When you leave behind all the things that you find all those things are always on your mind. And the mind is strange, cause there's a certain range of sounds of silence before you come to rage. This Christmas, I'll be hearing the sound, but I always remember the things that I found.
And up next, I want to play a track from the legendary Bloomington, Indiana proto-punk band MX80. This track comes off a 2003 compilation album titled Xmas Snert, put out by the Bloomington label Gulcher. This is MX80 with I Spent Christmas with the Devil.
I spent Christmas with the devil. It's not what you think. He loves to shop. He loves eggnog. In fact, it's his favorite drink.
And finally, I want to play a track from the beloved Indiana children's television personality, Cowboy Bob, who sadly passed away earlier this year.
Christmas time is drawing near. Happy, joyful time of year. Snow is falling all around. Hear that special sound of snowflakes drifting. Yesterday the trees were bare, now they've got a coat to wear.
I'm Kyle Long from Cultural Manifesto. I hope you enjoyed this unusual playlist of Indiana Christmas music.
Kyle Long with five local holiday tunes. You can hear Kyle's A Cultural Manifesto on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio Wednesday nights at 9 or Saturday nights at 10. Thanks for spending some time with The Art of the Matter on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio. I'm Sharon Gamble, and today's contributors included Jill Sheridan, Jill Dittmeyer, and Melissa Davis. You can hear our program twice each week on 90.1 FM, Saturday mornings at 7, Thursday evenings at 8. And if you hear something you like and want to share, go to WFYI for our podcast. Join us next week for more explorations of Central Indiana's arts and culture scene. And, of course, we'll have that arts calendar we call What'll We Do? All of that and so much more on The Art of the Matter here on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio.
You've been listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Central Indiana and Indianapolis. The Art of the Matter is executive producer Roxana Caldwell, producer Melissa Davis, contributor Jill Dittmeyer, and host Sharon Gamble. The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.